Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Hello, this is Michael from the Recording Library of West Texas. It's Monday, April 6th, 2020. Just a bit ago at 2 o'clock this afternoon, Texas Governor Greg Abbott gave a press conference to give the latest news on how Texas is responding to COVID-19. I'm going to play that press conference in its entirety for you. It runs 32 minutes. After that, we will return to the local newspapers. The first 4 minutes of this audio is a bit rough because of problems with the feed that they were having, but it clears out after that. Here's Governor Abbott.
Before I get into that, however, let me give you an update on some things that have taken place today. Earlier today, I had a telephone conference with all the governors, along with Vice President Pence, with HHS, CMS Director Seema Verma, with the head of the FEMA, Gaynor, with Secretary of Treasury Mnuchin, as well as with Dr. Deborah Birx, who is the White House doctor in charge of the coronavirus response. First, some information provided by Dr. Birx. After looking at data and information that have been compiled over the past few days, she said this. She said that it is clear from the data that mitigation efforts are working. She said that we are getting close to beginning to bend the curve, but also she made clear that if we let up now, all of our efforts that have led us to this point will have been for nothing. As a result, we must continue the distancing led to this early successful effort. Also, in presentation by Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, he said that states should begin receiving funds from the federal government around April the 24th that will help the states respond to the challenges posed by COVID-19. He also added that direct deposits of money to our fellow Americans should begin next week. This is the money that goes to individuals who earn $75,000 or less per year who would be available to receive up to $1,200 for a married couple, a family. It would include those who make $150,000 or less who could receive $2,400. He also added that they are working to get money to the states for the increase in amount of unemployment benefits that will be able to be deployed to those who need those benefits. He also talked about the Economic Recovery Program. This is a program that provides $2 million of loans for small businesses here in Texas, as well as the Paycheck Protection Program that helps businesses maintain payroll through loans of up to $10 million. There are certain qualifying specifics about each of those loan programs. One of the aspects about them is if they are handled correctly, it's possible that they are able to convert from a loan into a grant, meaning that the amount would not have to be repaid. A point has been made that these loans are available as we speak right now, primarily through banks in your community. It's important to go apply as quickly as possible because there's a certain amount of money that's available and you need to make sure that you get in line so that you will be able to access this money. The money that we're talking about is money that will very quickly reinvigorate our economy, start to continue economic growth, as well as to increase employment here in Texas. Additional information. In the past, you've heard me talk about travel restrictions. Let me update you on travel restrictions here in Texas. We maintain the travel restrictions about people being able to fly into Texas from what are considered to be hotspot zones for COVID-19. That includes New Orleans, Miami, Atlanta, the tri-state area around New York City, as well as Detroit and Chicago. In addition to that, we announced last week that the Texas Department of Public Safety was going to begin to pull over vehicles that have crossed the border from Louisiana into Texas and to provide them information where anybody coming from Louisiana who is not exempted must self-quarantine for 14 days. Beginning yesterday, the Texas Department of Public Safety has now altered that policy to increase enforcement by establishing checkpoints at all border crossings from Louisiana into the state of Texas. This is just a notice, if you would, to our friends from Louisiana. We know you are neighbors. We know that you are friends. We know that we both share the same approach, and that is we want to do all we can together to make sure that we mitigate the expansion of COVID-19 in our collective states. This is a temporary situation where we will be working more aggressively to reduce the number of people who are traveling from Louisiana into the state of Texas. So unless you are exempted by the items that were in my executive order, you will be pulled over to a checkpoint by the Texas Department of Public Safety, and you will be required to quarantine for 14 days in the state of Texas if you come across the border. Additionally, there's some interesting events that are taking place in the state of Texas with regard to the use of hydroxychloroquine. There's been an unfortunate identification of a number of residents at the medical resort Texas City, which is a nursing home there. A meaningful number of the people who are at that nursing home tested positive for COVID-19. As of today, about 30 patients are being tested with the hydroxychloroquine to determine whether or not it will be a successful treatment for those patients. They are, for the most part, in their second day of this testing regimen that will last several more days. We look forward to updating you as the week progresses about how this drug is aiding or not these patients at the medical resort, Texas City. Some update with regard to numbers here in Texas. As of today, as of this hour, there have been 85,357 Texans who have been tested for COVID-19. That is about a 20% increase over the number who had been tested yesterday. If you go back for about a week period of time, on average, we are increasing the number of people who are being tested by more than 10% per day, compounded daily. Of the more than 85,000 people who have now been tested, there are 7,319 who have tested positive. Once again, the number of people who test positive continues to remain less than 10% of everyone who is tested. By the way, of the people who were tested, we should easily this week exceed 100,000 in the number of Texans who are being tested. Of these 7,319 who have tested positive, we have confirmed hospitalizations for 1,153 of those individuals. And as of today, unfortunately, there have been 140 fatalities. Now, one thing that people also need to have information about is availability of healthcare facilities. As of today, there are 21,033 available beds statewide, including 2,223 IC unit beds that are available. Last week, as of that day, there were 8,857 ventilators that were available. Today, there are 6,080 ventilators that are available. That is not including 7,350 anesthesia machines with vents that could be used if needed. Now, one area that we've been focused on, and I know is of keen interest for communities across the state, and that is the amount of personal protection equipment that is available for every location to be able to respond to the challenges posed by COVID-19. So you can see on the screen behind me, there are different types of PPE supplies. There are masks, which include medical surgical masks, as well as N95 masks. There are the face shields, there are gloves, there are gowns, and there are coveralls. Let me tell you what we did this past week. So this past week, we distributed across the state of Texas 1,676,510 masks, 209,856 face shields, more than 2.7 million gloves, almost 170,000 gowns, and more than 7,500 coveralls. The good news is those numbers are continuing to increase. Additional masks, which is the part of the PPE that most people are asking for, they are on the way. Within the last 24 hours, we have received 2.5 million masks. In addition to that, later this week, we will be receiving an additional 3 million masks. So basically, in this 1 week period that we're in right now, we will be receiving more than 5 million masks that we will be distributing across the state of Texas. A couple of comments about how these come in and how they go out. They come in primarily through entities that our new supply chain team is working to contract with. We do continue to receive some supplies from the federal government, especially through FEMA. But I will let Nim Kidd and Dr. Hellerstedt weigh in more on this later. I think most of the supplies that we are now receiving are supplies that are being received as a result of the supply chain team that we put together. I see one member of that team here right now, and that is Dr. Zerwas. I'm not seeing Keith. Is Keith here? He's working. He's making purchases as we speak, which is exactly what we need him to do. But I do want Keith and the entire team that has been working on the supply chain. You have no idea the hours they are working. It seems like they are working for 24 hours a day, and they are dealing with entities across the entire globe. And it's so gratifying to see their hard work begin to bear fruit. Importantly, as these items are distributed, we make sure, as Dr. Hellerstedt will make clear here in a second, but we distribute them primarily to healthcare facilities across the state of Texas that need access to them. And this is in addition to the supplies that those healthcare facilities are already being able to get on their own through their pre-existing supply chains that these hospitals and other healthcare providers had in existence before the outbreak of COVID-19. Very importantly, I want to emphasize a couple of things, and that is, one thing that has helped the supply chain strike force achieve these great results is a portal that exists where so many people across the state, across the nation, and across the entire globe have provided information that leads to access for more supplies. That portal is www.texas.gov. That's www.texas.gov. If you have or know of supplies the state of Texas could use for us to distribute across the state, especially to our healthcare providers and first responders who need the personal protection equipment, please log into that site. Let us know about the supplies that you have. I will tell you this also. One thing that the state is benefiting from is volunteer nurses and doctors and healthcare providers that are needed to help respond to the challenge of COVID-19. at that very same site, volunteers who want to assist, especially in providing healthcare services, can find a link on there where you can click on and volunteer. Again, that is at www.texas.gov. And at that point, I think with regard to additional explanations about how this supply chain works in more detail, I would like to turn things over to Dr. Halderstadt.
Thank you, Devin Abbott. I'm John Halderstadt. I'm the commissioner for the Texas Department of State Health Services. And I want to talk a little bit about how we have prioritized the distribution of the personal protective equipment that we have obtained through the state through the various mechanisms that the governor related to. So we wanted to set out a set of priorities since the amounts that we had were not the amounts that had been available in the past, clearly because of COVID-19, the need, the demand for these supplies came up just at the same time that in many ways ordinary supply was curtailed. So we did come up with priorities, and our priorities are listed here. The first sets hospitals or healthcare professionals in contact or treating confirmed COVID patients with potential for high loss of life. Those individuals who are taking care of those folks need to be protected against COVID-19 because oftentimes they're in a setting that is the most high-risk setting for the spread of COVID-19. And we did not want to lose hospital capacity due to essentially taking out the healthcare workforce. Also, healthcare facilities that would include long-term care facilities where we saw an emerging outbreak. So in other words, a nursing home or a state-supported living center where there were proven cases of COVID-19, and we wanted to get personal protective equipment to those staff and also to help mask patients in order to curtail the spread of COVID-19 to those vulnerable populations. And we know that those vulnerable populations are at the most risk for poor outcomes for COVID-19. We also had as a priority facilities and EMS personnel that may encounter suspected cases or interface with vulnerable populations. And that could be other healthcare settings and hospitals that may not yet have a proven case of COVID-19. We supplied some to our emergency medical services personnel based on triage and the need that they might encounter someone that had respiratory issues. We had hospital staff for in-house testing and also for use in emergency departments. Long-term care facilities with a history of COVID were among our priorities. And then use for isolated step-down areas, in other words, where people who are recovering from COVID-19 may be recovering, but the staff that are taking care of them would need to be protected against COVID-19. Our next set of priorities were healthcare facilities, providers and first responders that have general patient encounters and needs. Also included were other healthcare settings that were not necessarily caring for an inpatient need for COVID-19 or have an inpatient that had COVID-19. We also included other healthcare professionals who are collecting COVID-19 test specimens and our other first responders. So with the supplies that we had, we were able to get some level of supplies to each of those priorities, although again, they are listed in a priority order, and so we went first with what we viewed to be the most critical needs. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Doctor. Next, I would like to have Chief Nemkid come up.
Thank you, Governor. Quickly talk about how we are getting the PPE distributed. And first is, as the donations or the purchases come into our central warehouse, they're being split out in two formats. One is to go to the hospital preparedness programs. In the next few slides, you'll see maps of that. But the second, because we have such a large state and we want to be closer to need, we're using our Texas Military Department armories. From there, local governments and healthcare providers can submit a State of Texas Assistance for Request form. We call it a STAR, and we will fill those STARs as the materials come in. Go to the next next slide, and I think this is probably one of the most important slides in the deck. And this is how we talk about our federal reimbursement. There are two tracks here. One that we deal with normally during disaster is the FEMA Category B reimbursement. But the second is the larger pot of money. $2 trillion and $12 billion has been made available by Congress. I think it is important that we remind everybody. Normally we remind our local governments, keep your receipts, keep your contracts, keep your invoices. In this case, every human that is spending money in response to COVID-19 needs to keep their invoices and the amounts of money that they're spending, where they're spending it, and what they're spending it on. As the federal government rolls out how their dollars will be distributed, it'll be very important that we have those accurately able to report. The next few slides actually talk about the parts of Texas that we're supplying. So you'll see the North Central Texas Regional Advisory Council, the amount of masks, face shields, gloves, gowns, and coveralls that from March 27th through yesterday have been distributed. Next slide will be for the Southeast Texas or the Houston area. Again, same numbers. Next slide. Piney Woods. Next slide. The border rack, and you can see how these racks are so large and be closer to need. That's why we're enlisting the help of Texas Military Department in their armories. Next slide. And then I think we have one more. There we go. Again, that's kind of all.
Very good. Well, first I want to thank Chief Kidd and Dr. Hellerstedt for their tireless work. I know you all are working around the clock, and thank you for your efforts in organizing things like this in addition to all your other duties. Also, one thing I want to make clear, and that is these boxes that you see behind me are not just a haphazard grouping of boxes. The first row of boxes on those three pallets are boxes of gloves and gowns. The larger boxes behind that, there are four pallets of larger boxes that are wrapped in plastic. Those are the masks that have come in that we will be distributing beginning today across the entire state of Texas, in addition to those that will be coming in later on this week. And with all of that, we'll be happy to take a few questions.
Governor, do you think that the federal government should take over this supply chain process, or are you satisfied with how the state has handled this issue?
Listen, the federal government during the beginning stages played a very important role, especially in setting up the drive-through testing lanes. As we have seen the process evolve over the past few weeks, the private sector has been able to provide a very robust response. First, with regard to testing, this massive new amount of testing capability that's being provided largely through the private sector is one reason why we are able to increase the amount of tests so much. That includes these rapid 15-minute tests provided by Abbott Labs that Texas continues to receive a large portion of. In addition to that, the same thing goes with regard to access to PPE or personal protection equipment, and that is there were supplies that pre-existed the onset of COVID-19. Some of it was in the national stockpile. Some of it was available in the private sector. A lot of it was quickly exhausted. Now that we have an effective supply chain organization working for the state of Texas, we've opened up a lot of new avenues through the private sector across the globe, now dramatically increasing our ability to acquire and disseminate PPE across the entire state of Texas.
So will Texas be lending ventilators
or any other medical equipment until permits have been made for the new virus and Texas are ready to step up and help out others, especially with regard to doing things like providing ventilators. Where Texas is on the rise in the number of people who test positive, as well as the increase in the number of people who are being hospitalized, we are a week or two behind states like California and New York. They had a more significant onset earlier than did the state of Texas. What we are preparing for in the state of Texas is increased numbers over the coming weeks of the people who are testing positive and of the people who are being hospitalized. And as you might imagine, our first obligation is to make sure that our fellow Texans are going to have access to the ventilators that may be needed. And so we continue to model, to make assessments, to be in contact with hospitals and doctors across the entire state of Texas, as well as talking to the national medical advisors like Dr. Birx about what they think we may need here in the state of Texas. And so if we make the assessment that we have 100% capability of meeting the healthcare needs for the people of the state of Texas, at that point in time, we would be able to help out other states.
Governor, the state has launched a mental health hotline for folks who are needing additional help. Is there anything else that the state can do to focus on mental health of Texans during this time?
Well, there is a lot, and I'll answer that in part, but someone who knows a whole lot about it is Dr. Hellerstedt. I'd like to have Dr. Hellerstedt address it first, obviously, from the medical and DSHS perspective.
Absolutely. Thank you, Governor. I think one of the things that is most important is for people to realize that they have things that they can do that they are already have been doing, that we believe there's evidence already that we are bending the curve, if you will. So we are making the disease less severe than it would have been had we not taken the steps that the governor has had the state put in place, as well as local leadership. So to me, one of the most fundamental things of mental health is to have hope, for people to see that there are things that they can be doing that will work. I know that the HHSC, which has a lot of the behavioral health services, has made these hotlines available. I think they're great. But as far as for all of us, including everyone, I think, here in this room, we are experiencing the stress of having to deal with COVID-19. But the way we can successfully deal with it is to take the concern that we have and turn it into useful action. And that is exactly what we've been doing. That is exactly what social distancing is all about. That is exactly what now the recommendation to have cloth face coverings people should wear in public so that they're not exhaling the germs and they're helping to protect other people. Messages that we've had about personal hygiene and sanitation and cleanliness of the environment. That's all working. As the governor said earlier, at a national level, there's some recognition that maybe we are getting to a point where we are slowing the acceleration of the disease. That's very important to understand. We will still see some progression of it over time, but maybe much more slowly than we would have otherwise. That should give everyone hope. There is light at the end of the tunnel, and to me, that is one of the most important mental health messages.
I feel more confident now than I ever have with regard to access to PPE supplies. What we have, for example, is the approximate 5,000 that we've aggregated over the past few days of face masks that we are distributing, which is more than enough for right now. What I know is additional supplies that are coming in. I know purchase orders that are out as we speak right now that could lead to a very substantial number coming in that I don't want to get ahead of things because I don't want to announce it until I have it in hand. But knowing the information that I have and the visibility of what is coming in, Texas looks to be very well supplied. You know, it's very interesting because I've had multiple and very meaningful conversations with the Tarrant County judge, with the Denton County judge, with Bexar County judge, and I've maintained contact with the Dallas mayor, as well as mayors in the Dallas region, as well as Mayor Nirenberg in San Antonio, as well as maintaining, whether it be myself or our team, in communications with leadership in Harris County, as well as the smaller communities around the state of Texas. I checked, and according to my office, we've had zero inquiries or phone calls from the Dallas County judge ever with regard to COVID-19. I have hosted multiple telephone town hall conferences for mayors and county judges. There have been often at least 1,000 local elected officials on those calls. I don't have any clarity whether or not the Dallas County judge was on there. Often at least 1,000 local elected officials on those calls. I don't have any clarity whether or not the Dallas County judge was on there or not. But bottom line, I've never heard of him or from him. He has attempted to communicate through social media, and I communicated through a form of a letter. I wanted to make clear that what happened part of that instant, and that is, listen, a major general with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers indicated that Clay Jenkins indicated to him, to the major general, that he had no intention to use the K. Bailey Hutchison facility in downtown Dallas. And so we needed to find out whether or not they actually were going to use the K. Bailey Hutchison Center, because other federal officials told me that if Dallas County is not going to use that, the people who would be manning that operation and those beds that are currently there right now would have to be located elsewhere. So we needed to find out if Dallas County was in fact going to utilize this. If not, other federal officials may be moving those supplies elsewhere. And that was the reason behind why I sent that letter to Judge Jenkins.
Can you identify other locations at this point based on this sort of back and forth with Dallas?
Identified other locations for what?
For some of these supplies and resources to be sent to.
Which supplies?
Whether that's PPE or...
The current supplies, yeah.
The convention center locations, yep. Are there other locations that have been identified?
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to. So, what you're asking about, are there other locations where what currently exists at Dallas County would be moved to? So, that would be a federal decision. So, in other words, it was the federal officials telling us that they would be required to move it elsewhere if Dallas County was not going to use it. They didn't tell us where they would move it to. And so, based upon Dr. Fauci's comment about the importance of stay-at-home policies, I wanted to find out directly from him what his assessment was of the state of Texas and the center that we have in place. And he told me, Governor, what you have in Texas is perfectly fine. The main thing is just to ensure compliance with it. He says that it's one thing having a standard, it's another thing achieving compliance. And that the important thing to achieve mitigation is to ensure that people do comply with the standard that the state of Texas has. But Dr. Fauci said that the standard Texas has is fine. And so you will know before that, I talked separately, privately with Dr. Birx, who also provided information about what the Texas standard should be. And importantly, for all of these standards, the first person I talked to and a person I talked to pretty much on a daily basis is Dr. Hellerstedt.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, April 5th, 2020. Section A. Report suggests Midlanders following guidelines by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E, at MRT.com. Although the City of Midland has not issued a shelter-in-place order, a Google report using cell phone location histories to track a community's response to the coronavirus pandemic suggests Midlanders are beginning to follow guidelines set by city and county leaders. The data used in the report is the same data used to calculate popular times for various destinations in Google Maps. It analyzed counties nationwide and provides overall data for countries globally. According to the report for Midland County, there has been a 41% drop in visits to retail and recreation locations, 19% decrease in visits to grocery stores, 45% decrease at parks, 24% decrease at transit stations, bus stops, and 25% decrease at workplaces. The data also shows residents are staying home more, with users spending 12% more time at their residences. Residents of Midland County were largely following their regular schedules until about mid-March, the report shows. The first confirmed case of COVID-19 in Midland was announced March 20th, and visits to outside locations have declined since then. Governor Greg Abbott's executive order on March 19th that closed dine-in options at restaurants, as well as closed bars and gyms, likely caused the sharp decline in visits to retail and recreation locations. The drop in park visits likely correlates with the City of Midland's decision to close Dennis the Menace Park and close playground structures at all parks. The report suggests Ector County is not following shelter-in-place guidelines as much as Midland. There has been a 5% drop in visits to grocery stores in Ector County, 8% decrease for transit stations, 32% for retailers, and 24% for workplaces. There was no data available for parks in Ector County. Residents there are staying home 10% more of the time. Ector County had its first confirmed case of COVID-19 last Friday, a week after Midland County. There are now 15 confirmed cases in Ector County compared to 19 in Midland County. The overall data for Texas is 45% for retail and recreation, 23% for grocery and pharmacy, 27% for parks, 47% for transit stations, 36% for workplaces, 13% for residential. The overall data for the U.S. is 47% for retail and recreation, 22% for grocery and pharmacy, 19% for parks, 51% for transit stations, 38% for workplaces, and 12% for residential. MPD Chief, take guns inside at end of the day, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman said last week that Midlanders should take their guns out of their vehicles and into their home at the end of the day. He said juveniles and adults are breaking into vehicles looking for weapons, and that most of the break-ins happen from vehicles that are not locked. A very minimal amount is window breaks, Herman said. He said those breaking into vehicles are adept at finding weapons that are within the reach of a driver or in the immediacy of the driver's seat. He said many break-ins take place at night. It takes seconds, Herman said. Kids and adults well-versed in criminal acts know where to look. Herman said those weapons systems can be sold online and be used in violent acts. He told the Reporter-Telegram about a case in which more than 10 guns were taken from the same vehicle. He said a gun owner has sole responsibility for the weapon, and that includes making sure it's stored in a secure place. If you are in for the night, take your guns inside the house, Herman said. Local news. Churches will have Easter services at drive-in movie theater. Mid-Cities will show one pre-recorded presentation on all three screens. Redeemer Church to do live service. By J.C. Lewis. J-A-C-Y.L-E-W-I-S at HearstNP.com. Some area churches have decided to hold their Easter services at the Big Sky Drive-In Theater. Mid-Cities Community Church and Redeemer Church will take over the drive-in movie theater to hold church services for people in their cars. Daniel Stevens, head pastor of Mid-Cities Community Church, said they are abiding by the standards set forth by city leaders. We were trying to creatively think of a way that we can engage our people and people of the community, he said. in a way that would be unique for Easter, but would be in line with the guidelines set before us for meeting. He said he wanted people to be able to gather, but in a safe way. Stephen said they contacted Big Sky Drive-In Theater and found out the venue was available. We thought it would be a great opportunity for people to be able to have semblance of togetherness, even though they can't get out of their cars. They have to stay in their cars, but there would be a sense of togetherness even in the drive-in. Mid-City's community church service will be pre-recorded, he said. The presentations on Saturday and April 12th will include various videos, stories, testimonies, worship, and a message on the big screen. The audio will come through vehicle's radio just as it would for a movie at the drive-in. Whoever would like to come, the gates open at 8 p.m. and the service will begin at 8:45 p.m. We will have all three screens available Saturday and Sunday night. He said there were some caveats. The concession stand and restrooms won't be open, so people will need to use the restroom before they come. The service is about 1 hour long, he said, and they have to stay in their car. They can't get out and visit with other people. They can wave at them. They can wear whatever they want, if they want to wear pajamas or their Easter best. It won't matter because they will stay in their cars. Stephen said they have been communicating with the congregation from Facebook Live posts and various social media platforms. Our people have been used to worshiping online, he said. I think in our community right now, medically, this is a serious concern that people need to adhere to the leadership and guidelines. But there's also a reality with isolation comes very spiritual ramifications, along with the economic and medical ramifications. He said their main concern is people's spiritual growth, their families, and their relationships with God. We want to create any environment we can in a safe way that is in line with leadership in our community, to help people get through this, to give them hope. He said they have had an extremely positive reaction to the drive-in Easter service. We have had very little pushback, if any, on that because I think we have communicated and people understand that we are not going to be pulling out lawn chairs and letting kids run around and play or use the restroom, he said. We're asking people to stay in their cars, and if they cannot, then we have many other services online as well. He said two other churches will be hosting Easter services at the drive-in, Redeemer Church and First United Methodist. I'm excited to see that the church as a whole, the big community of the churches, is figuring out creative ways to continue to spread the gospel and bring hope to people. Cameron Brown, executive pastor of Redeemer Church, said they wanted to find an opportunity to get their congregation together and still comply with social distancing. We've been flooded with comments and excitement, Brown said. I think people are really starved for the, at very least, just getting to see other people's faces, and they're very excited. Redeemer Church will hold a live service at 10:30 a.m. Sunday at the drive-in. The gates will open at 10 a.m., and people are required to stay in their cars. There will be clear directions on where to go once you get there, and people to help you park once you're there. But everybody needs to stay in their cars during the service, and it will be transmitted through their radios. Brown said the worship team will be conducting the service from a platform set up in front of Screen 2. We talked about incorporating some things on the screen, he said. However, you can't see anything on the screen during the day at that time. We'll be doing it so the whole thing will be live. He said the worship pastor will lead people in worship and then people will hear a message from the lead pastor, Jason Hatch. Brown said that David Furlow, Big Sky Drive-In Theater General Manager, has been awesome to work with.
He clearly has a heart for the community, and using his space, even during a difficult time like now, we've been extremely thankful for him. Before Mid-Cities Community Church service starts, people will have a chance to give back to the community. Stephen said they are encouraging people to bring items for Mission Agape, which is helping feed multiple schools in Midland. We are having receptacles where people can, on their way in, drop those off so they won't be handing them to people. There would be an option for people to give. People can go to midcities.org or missionagapewesttex.org/mission-agape-donate/ for the list of donatable items. In a crisis like this, obviously there's kids and elderly that need food. The West Texas Food Bank, we support them, and they're mainly receiving monetary donations right now, which we are engaged in. With Mission Agape, they are receiving donations if it's on the list they provide. We are just encouraging people if they come to bring something from that list and drop it off. Stephen said that as Christians in the moment, our job isn't to hoard or to consume, but to give.
Coronavirus cases in Midland, Odessa, adjacent counties, top 50. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. The 5 new confirmed cases reported in Andrews County and 2 new cases in Midland County on Saturday bring the total number of cases in Midland, Odessa, and adjacent counties to 55. The Andrews County News reported the 5 cases Saturday on its Facebook page. It was the second most in any county on one day, only topped by the 7 in Odessa on Friday. Andrews County had 1 case as of 8 p.m. Friday, according to statistics from the Texas Department of State Health Services on its website. In Midland County, the 2 new cases are a male in his 20s, the source of exposure is related to international travel, a female in her 30s, the source of exposure is contact to a known case. Both patients were tested by private providers. The male's isolation period is complete. The female is isolating at home, according to information from the City of Midland. Midland County tops the list of confirmed cases in the area with 24. Ector County, which did not report a new case Saturday, is second with 22. Crane County, where the first case in the Permian Basin was reported, has 2, and Martin County has 1. According to the DSHS. Midland County finishes its second week with 2 more confirmed cases than it did during the first week, 13 compared to 11. The number of cases in Midland has been split evenly between men and women, 12 each, and the most cases are in the 20 to 29-year-old age range, 10 according to numbers from the health department. Also, coming Saturday, the number of confirmed cases in Midland County trailed Lubbock County, 138, Randall and Potter, Amarillo, with a total of 48, and Taylor County, Abilene, with 23.
MPD Chief, Pandemic Requires Changes in Protocol, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Protecting the community from the criminal element is tough enough for Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman. It got tougher with the coronavirus pandemic. Herman told the Reporter Telegram last week that MPD has taken measures to protect both police officials and residents. The main goal appears to be mitigating face-to-face contact as much as possible. "It is for our safety and the safety of civilians," Herman said. Measures include handling calls over the phone, including those for advice of rights or those for which a report doesn't have to be taken in person. Herman also mentioned the new police-to-citizen online reporting system, p2c.midlandtexas.gov/. This application, according to the city, enables residents to easily report non-emergency incidents. This method should not be used if anyone was injured as a result of the incident or if an officer should be dispatched to the location of a crime. Herman said there are times when enforcement activities will require proactive efforts, including stops related to traffic violations, including speeding, reckless driving, and DWI. Other proactive efforts are arrests and offenses deemed public safety concerns. Saying one has coronavirus will not be an acceptable excuse for not having acceptable contact with police. As far as the mayor's recent disaster declaration update, which includes allowing businesses to have a number of customers that is equal to 10% of a business's occupancy, Herman said the onus falls on store management to make sure a business is abiding by the mayor's decision. The chief also said that Midlanders must do their part when it comes to limiting the number of people gathered in one place, whether it is a business or a park. He said the SWAT team usually isn't needed to keep kids from congregating at a park, but responsible members of the community must abide by the regulations. Avoiding police intervention and having law enforcement available to protect the community from the criminal element is Herman's preference. Herman said conditions during the pandemic, especially with schools being closed, resemble summer. Juvenile crime has increased, so has the number of family violence situations, which he believes is due to the stress related to the economy and limited ability to leave home. He said burglary of a vehicle is a big problem, especially those looking to steal guns from vehicles. The city also reported that the Midland Fire Department is working closely with Midland Health and the hospital to ensure protection of first responders and community members to maintain operational ability. The MFD is also following CDC guidelines for pre-hospital guidance on patient contact.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, April 5th, 2020.
County A. Shutting rooms. SOB licenses.
Ector County Commissioners will consider several contracts between testing laboratories and the county during a special meeting set for 10 a.m. Monday in the Commissioners' Courtroom of the Ector County Administration Building Annex, 1010 East 8th. Commissioner Precinct 3 Dale Childers said the county currently has a product that captures and records all commissioners' court meetings, and that's mandated by law. He said this would be a software update that will improve the quality of the live stream. Childers added that this upgrade will help in other areas of county business as well and help continue to practice social distancing. The last meeting, Childers said, which was hard to hear, was a learning experience for all of us. He added that something better is needed, and if it's approved, he would like to get the improved platforms up and running as soon as possible. The agenda also includes discuss and take any necessary action to approve policies relevant to establishment of essential and non-essential departments, personnel, duties, payroll, timekeeping, isolation requirements, leave requests certification, telecommuting, and equipment use as related to COVID-19. Proposed agreements would be between the county and Quest Diagnostics, LabCorp, and CPL. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said if the court approves, this would ramp up testing capacity for COVID-19. What we're looking at is how we can increase the number of test samples sent off to the lab to be tested for COVID-19, she said. The county is going to discuss approving contracts with three different labs so that we will already start putting procedures in place if we need to start collecting samples, then we will already have contracts in place in which to facilitate the testing process. Commissioners also will consider action to extend the declaration of local disaster. Hays declared a disaster in late March. On a separate item, the court will consider the suspension of all licenses issued under the Game Room Ordinance and the Sexually Oriented Business Ordinance until further notice, and that no new licenses shall be issued by the Sheriff's Department until further order of the court, the agenda said. County Attorney Dusty Gallivan said this covers all licenses that are currently issued, and the businesses will not be allowed to operate during this time. Unfortunately, the sheriff's office doesn't have the manpower to enforce those ordinances at this time, Gallivan said. A separate item has the commissioners considering implementation of BIS digital recording to include the capability to live stream on two separate platforms, the current BIS site and Ector County Commissioners YouTube, and to include 5 meeting rooms, each capable of providing up to 50 participants, 25 video audio, 25 audio only, the agenda said. The court also will consider an amendment to an agreement with the University of Texas Permian Basin concerning nursing students. Gallivan said the county has an agreement with UTPB where students training to be nurses can do clinicals at the jail. The agreement would be modified so that they can also do those with the health department if the court approves. Local numbers. Medical Center hospital officials ask those experiencing symptoms to call 432-640-2747. The line will be answered from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. If you are showing symptoms and phone lines are closed, please self-quarantine and call back during phone operating hours. Call 911 for all medical emergencies. Get some help. Need help? Know someone who does? If you or someone you care about are feeling overwhelmed with emotions like sadness, depression, or anxiety, or feel like you want to harm yourself or others, call 911. Call the Disaster Distress Helpline at 1-800-985-5990 and TTY 1-800-846-8517 or text Talk With Us to 66746. Call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. TTY 1-800-787-3224. Man Camps Prepare to Weather Virus Pandemic by Michael Bauer. An unprecedented coronavirus pandemic combined with the drop in oil prices has left some businesses in the Permian Basin searching for answers. Others have been trying to adapt to it, while others are preparing to weather the storm. One of those businesses is Oilfield Lodging, or Man Camps. Ralph McInvale, one of the managers at Permian Lodging, says his team of employees hasn't been hit too hard from the effects of the virus just yet, but they are ready for anything. Of course, our business has slowed down, he said. The whole world has slowed down, obviously, but we have a pretty good staff. We immediately got going with the conference calls and everything. We reached out to all the health departments in West Texas. As far as what steps they've taken to try to avoid the spread of the virus, McInvale said his employees have been following the same guidelines that everyone else has tried to follow. We actually followed the really big hotel chains and what they're doing, he said. For example, we have full cafes at all facilities. We only serve our meals to go. We have limited our touch points everywhere. Of course, our staff always wears gloves. That includes high traffic areas around properties. We increased the cleaning in the lobbies, Mackingvale said. We've closed our gyms. We've done everything that everyone else has done. We've been pretty smart about this because we realize how serious it is, and we want to protect our tenants and our own employees as best we can. However, business has still slowed down in recent weeks, just like with everyone else. But when they saw what was happening around the globe regarding the pandemic, Mackingvale and his staff saw the writing on the wall. We have a pretty good staff, he said. We immediately got going with the conference calls and everything. We reached out to all the health departments in West Texas. We've done everything that everyone else has done. We've been pretty smart about this because we realize how serious it is, and we want to protect our tenants and our own employees as best we can. Permian Lodging, a Louisiana-based housing company that provides units for industrial workers, owns 6 locations, including Midland, Monahans, Pecos, Orla, Big Spring, and Carlsbad, New Mexico. As if dealing with COVID-19 hadn't been enough, the business also faces uncertainty resulting from the collapse of oil prices. On January 14th, the price of crude oil was around $58.23 a barrel. On March 31st, it had fallen to as little as $20.48. Mackingvale says people have to be realistic about the situation. You have to understand that these are really tough times. The price of oil is crazy. The location in Monahans has up to 455 bedrooms. According to Mackingvale, they have about 250 to 400 people housed at that location right now, but that number changes due to the unpredictability of the oil industry. It fluctuates daily, he said. The oil field is getting hit really hard right now with the price of oil and the COVID-19 virus. We're probably 250 to 400 people, depending on how the crews rotate in and out. But he is hopeful about hanging on to his staff. He said the company employs around 235 people. We're trying not to lay people off, Mackingvale said. We've been very fortunate. We're making people work straight shifts, but they still have a job. That's what we've been stressing. We've been hanging on to as many people as we can. It's going to be hard on everybody, but we're making sure that we're going through this process.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.